Every effort is made by the book trade to persuade us that their little world is a civilized place. Publishers, writers, and bookshops have been arguing this for as long as anyone can remember. But my next guest, the British writer Alexander Johnson, argues that civilized picture is, indeed, has always been, far from true. A rough idea of Alex's argument can be gained by a glance at the contents page of his new book. He has chapters on, I'll run down, insults, feuds, fisticuffs, critics, fakes, censorship, and villains. The book is called When Books Go Bad, Tales of Literary Feuds, Publishing Errors, and Withering Reviews. Here to talk truth to the trade is Alex Johnson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, David.
Now, look, in the spirit of confession, I'm wondering to what extent this book is driven by your own unhappy experience with the book trade.
I've got a very happy experience. I think it's now, generally, I've got on very well with my publishers, and I can't think of any absolutely appalling things that they've done to me, but perhaps they've done it behind my back and I haven't noticed yet.
You have some painful, painful paragraphs about typos in books. You know, the manuscripts that are so carefully, carefully examined for, you know, that there be not a single error anywhere. And yet, what is it about typos, Alex, that they survive? They're like a form of life that can't be put down.
Yeah, no, it's terrible, isn't it? They say that's the best way to find a typo is to write your book, have it looked at by a couple of sub-editors and the kind of copy editors, and then have it printed. And then as soon as you get the first copy, open it up at a random page and you'll spot a typo. So it's definitely a major problem for everybody. I think it's just that's humans rather than AI for you, isn't it?
Exactly that has happened to me. Just exactly that. I mean, in the end, I just had to laugh. It was just hilarious.
Yeah,
just
yeah,
hilarious.
Nothing you can do.
But now look, literary feuds. On the surface, one of the good things about literary feuds is that they're just words, but things can get out of hand, can't they?
Yes, very much so. I mean, I think writers are very suspicious of other writers quite often, and they certainly don't want them to seem doing better than they are themselves. So I think throughout history, you know, going back to the ancient Greeks, you've got people who are ready to put somebody down.
Isn't the problem, isn't what sparks feuds between writers is that A, writers will have strong opinions of each other's work, and B, they are the people who really, really know how to hurt.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's the good thing about writers. They're very clever, obviously, because they're writing a lot. I mean, but so that they come up with some very kind of wild Oscar Wildean pensées about, you know, nice ways of putting them down. So I think it was Gore Vidal that said, it's not enough that I succeed, others must fail. And I think, well, going back to Clive James as well, one of his poems, the book of my enemy has been remaindered and I am pleased. I think that's the thing. They're very clever, so it's very cutting, and it's, you know, sticks and stones actually are quite unpleasant.
And it's thrilling to read about. I mean, yes, the high-minded you and me can say that it's quite unpleasant, but still it's thrilling to read about. I am surprised by how much of the feuding is snobbery. I mean, wasn't Virginia Woolf the most horrible snob?
Yes, I mean, she's very bad. I mean, particularly about people like Arnold Bennett and James Joyce, that she, you know, she attacks their writing for various reasons, but a lot of it is that looking down on them because they haven't come from high birth. And that's a long-standing thing. So you have the same thing with Lord Byron and John Keats. Byron's very rude about Keats.
Because Keats's father worked in a stable or something, didn't he?
Yeah, well, yes. I mean, obviously, Lord Byron's quite high society, and Keats is much more middle class.
But what did Byron say about Keats?
Oh, well, he was very rude about his poetry, which he rather regretted when Keats died young. He said it was a great loss to literature. But he called him all kinds of things, like the tadpoles of the lakes, compared to the other lake poets. Like Wordsworth and Coleridge, and yes, I think they get it into their heads that they've got to smack down the upstarts who are coming up at them.
You say in the introduction to the book that the quality of the literature doesn't really matter, but it does, doesn't it? Because don't we have a different response to one of these vicious put downs or the feuds where the literary judgment behind them is perfect, where the put down is absolutely deserved.
Yes, I think if you've written something, I think there's a case of imposter syndrome with every book you write. I think all writers have it a bit. And I think if somebody actually hits the nail on the head of something that you've always suspected about your work, that can be very cutting, I think. And people are very accurate, and they do spend a long time looking and analysing things. So there's always that slight worry, I suppose, yes.
I had a great deal of sympathy with that Oxford academic who, when listening to J.R.R. Tolkien reading from his latest manuscript, "Oh God, no more elves."
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you can see why, can't you? I mean, I'm a big Tolkien fan, but if he's coming in with elves all the time, and I think you've given quite a pared down version, because in some versions of that story, he's a lot ruder about the elves.
If only I'd known. Hey, there's an incident in the book which I think is one of the most, I mean, it's just flesh creeping. So somebody gives somebody else 2 volumes of the work of Henry James. Tell this story. It's just, it's too terrible.
Yeah, well, it's terrible. Henry James is visiting a friend of his, and he's had tea with them. And just as he's leaving, the friend's husband runs out and gives him the books. These books, somebody's brought these books around. Please take them away. They're terrible. And it's Henry James's own books. And the husband who's handed them over doesn't realise at all. Henry James is very polite about it. He takes them away. But I think that's the worst thing you can have as a writer. People you don't know saying your books are not very good. Please take them out of my house.
On ABC Radio National, this is Late Night Live. I'm David Marr. I'm talking to Alex Johnson about this extremely mischievous book he has written, When Books Go Bad. You have all of these wonderful rules from various libraries about the regard with which books must be held and, you know, what you can do with them and what you can't do with them. But on the other hand, an anecdote there about a hangman who was used to burn censored books. Now, what was that about?
Yes, well, this is D.H. Lawrence. I mean, he had a lot of his books confiscated by the police on a police raid. And just burnt publicly. I don't know particularly why they used a hangman. That seems particularly macabre, doesn't it?
But somehow yes, terrible. Perfect at the same time.
Yeah, no, absolutely bang on. I mean, it sums the whole thing up, doesn't it, really? Burning books using a hangman.
So but nothing beats the fate you record of thousands of volumes of Mills and Boone.
Yes, they turned into, yes, kind of pulp. I mean, rather than just straight pulping them and recycling them and doing something positive with them, being used for the motorway in the UK, being used as the kind of underlay, which I suppose is also a way of recycling them, but perhaps not in the way the authors would hope. I'd rather hope that didn't happen to anything that I'd written.
Is this length of the motorway particularly celebrated in literary circles?
No, I think they've kept it quiet. I think it's probably a little bit like, the mafia deciding to bury the bodies of their victims in concrete at anonymous places. I think they just said, "Oh no, it's all part of the M1 somewhere."
You've also got really terrible stories for readers and writers like me of destroyed documents of huge value, and you have the account there of Dickens burning his correspondence.
Yes, I think a lot of people, I mean, he's not alone, you know, people like Larkin as well, who don't want the ages after them to know exactly what's happened to them. And of course, it happens to people like Byron that I mentioned earlier. Even after his death, his publisher and his friends burnt all his letters and journals.
Yep.
Because they said it was too terrible to cast shine on them. And even that, but in that case, various people already read them beforehand. Lady Caroline Lamb, and a couple of other people, I think the Shelleys had read them, and they have never expressed anything. I think it's a bit of a good PR stunt, really.
But a terrible shame. But you also
a terrible shame. Yeah.
You also record the destruction of the Theosophical Society's archive in the 2025 Los Angeles fires. Now, why does that matter?
They had by some distance the largest concentration of books and other kind of ephemera and matter about theosophy in the world. So it's one of these things where there are things there that were never going to be replaced again. And in some ways, I mean, the Los Angeles fires were terrible, but in literary terms, although they were damaging to a lot of bookshops and printers and things, it could have been a lot worse. But that was, I mean, that's a true massive loss that, you know, international researchers and users of their library and their documents said, well, you know, they'll never recover that.
No, no. Now, what about right now in the literary world? What are the literary feuds, Alex, that you most admire?
The literary feuds I most admire. I don't know about right now. I'm not sure people do them so well now. I mean, you do have people getting on each other's nerves, but I think there are, you know, people like Mark Twain attacking Jane Austen because he hated her literature. I mean, he said something like, you know, he hated her so much he wanted to dig her up and beat her over the skull with her own shin bone.
Yeah, but Alex, he said, every time I read her work, I want to dig her up and beat her with this. So he's reading her work again and again and again.
But there you go. That's the real test, isn't it? Yeah, she won that one, really. And also, he was just generally bad-natured, so he has a go at everybody, like Henry James and Emerson and the German language. I mean, he's quite wide-ranging in his attacks. So, that's bad news. But
I enjoyed the dispute between Le Carré and Rushdie. Tell us about that.
That was a real kind of tit-for-tat arguing against people. I think it gets out of hand. Somebody makes a comment and then they can't get it out of their mind. And that was all done very publicly through the pages, newspaper pages. I think it was in the Times. And then eventually, of course, like a lot of these things, because there's no real substance to it, it's just somebody saying, you know, I don't like your writing. And the other person says, I don't like yours. And then they realise they're being childish. So they just get together. And I think it was Rushdie said he really regretted it because, you know, he actually quite admires the work. It's just one small thing. And it's just one thing that kind of pains.
But there was more to it, wasn't there, that there was Rushdie's sense that he was not being supported by Le Carré in his problems after the publication of Satanic Verses.
With the fatwa, yes. I mean, I think he felt this with a lot of other people, that they could have got behind him a bit more. And John Le Carré was very much the opinion that, you know, Rushdie knew what he was doing and he had to take the consequences. And it's completely understandable if you're Rushdie, isn't it? You'd rather hope that everybody in the literary establishment would get behind you, but that's the way it goes.
Is the mark of a real feud, of a real literary feud, that it is not resolved by death? Sure, Byron said some kind words about Keats once young Keats had died, but was it Gore Vidal of Capote saying that his death was a good career move?
Exactly. I mean, Gore Vidal, there's quite a lot of stories about Gore Vidal in there. People like Gore Vidal, I think they like the cut and thrust of it. That's why they exist partly. It's as much their persona that they're building up on as it is their actual body of work. I mean, I think if you asked people nowadays to name any of Gore Vidal's books, I think they'd probably struggle quite hard. But you could probably come up with various sayings and expressions.
They forget the books and remember the quips.
Exactly. Yeah,
what a brutal fate.
Yeah, it is. But I think that's probably true as well for people like Oscar Wilde to an extent. I mean, not so much. People are more familiar with his work. But, you know, he's celebrated, I think, as much for his, you know, his fine flamboyant, you know, nothing to declare but my genius kind of things as he is for
importance of being earnest. Sure, but the importance of earnest still sells out if it's a good cast.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, it's still very good and they're still filming it and things.
But now, look, Alex, the last question. I've left this question to last because it may raise some bitterness, which I didn't want to come between us during our interview, you know, during our talk. What have the reviews been like of your book? Have you reason to hate reviewers because of it? Have you begun any feuds following the publication of When Books Go Bad?
No. The review has been very kind, very good. I think people like reading and about the kind of seamy underbelly of literary life and puncturing it. Now, I think generally I find as well that reviewers I've been very lucky that reviewers are generally very kind. It's the people on things like Amazon who sometimes are a bit wonky. And
those amateurs, there.
Exactly. I did a book a while ago about bookshelf design, and several people gave it bad reviews because they said they'd expected it. They were buying a bookshelf, not a book about bookshelves. And it's like, oh, God, You know, sometimes your heart drops.
Sometimes it does, Alex, but nevertheless, thank you for coming on Late Night Live.
Thank you, David. Thank you.
I've been talking to Alex Johnson about his new book, When Books Go Bad, Tales of Literary Feuds, Publishing Errors and Withering Reviews, published by the British Library.